members of the crew. They were doubtful whether he would ever live through this valiant voyage across the Atlantic. Srila Prabhupada wrote in his diary, seasickness, heart palpitations. He said, my only solace is sitting and reading the nectarine pastimes of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada on many occasions explained that his greatest solace in life was simply to hear the words of Kaviraj Goswami from the Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Of this book, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, is very important.
Not only will we play this on the speakers, but every couple of weeks we will also distribute to all the devotees a printout of every devotee's talk. Make sure you do a lot of research.
So Srila Prabhupada begins the introduction to this book, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, by explaining the term Chaitanya Charitamrita. The word Chaitanya means life force or consciousness. Amrita. Mrita means dead and Amrita means immortal. And Charitra means character. So the word Chaitanya Charitamrita means character of the living force in immortality. Now, we are all accustomed to seeing the living force being displayed. All of us are examples of how the living force is acting and functioning. But we do not see it being displayed immortally, because his body is always perishable. This consciousness is now being displayed mortally. But Prabhupada explains that actually this consciousness, the real nature and the constitutional position of this life force is that it is immortal. It is eternal. And exactly how this immortal consciousness is different from God is also explained. Both God and the living entity have life force and they are eternal. So they are the same in this respect. But there is a principal difference. And this is that the living entity, he tends to fall down. Krishna, on the other hand, or God, he is also called Achyuta, which means one who never falls down. Srila Prabhupada gives a nice example in which he says that all of us, the living entities, are as if they are on the earth, caught up in their own activities. But for one who rises high, he rises above the clouds, he then sees the sun. From the point of view of outside the clouds, the material creation seems very insignificant from the point of view of God. So God never falls down any more than the sun can fall down below the clouds. So God, he never falls down. The living entity, he is different from God because he tends to get influenced and conditioned by the material nature. And this is called Maya. The Mayavadis, they claim that God is also under the control of Maya. That is why they are called Mayavadis. But they do not understand the transcendental nature of Krishna. In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna declared such people to be mudhas, because they do not understand his transcendental nature and his supreme dominion over all that be. So they think that Krishna is just an ordinary mortal and that he is also under the influence of Maya. But this is not true. And Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. And he has come to teach us how to restore ourselves back to our immortal position. And because he is Krishna, we can understand that he never falls down. He comes in the guise of his devotee and he is teaching us to be perfect devotees. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of a teacher who is teaching a student how to write the alphabets A, B, C, D. Sometimes because the student cannot learn fast enough or well enough, the teacher himself will write the alphabets. And some foolish person who is looking at the teacher may think that actually the teacher is just learning to write A, B, C, D. Actually, the teacher is perfect in his knowledge. Similarly, Lord Chaitanya himself comes down in the guise of a devotee to teach us conditioned souls how to become a perfect devotee. So we should not think that he is just a conditioned soul like any one of us. He is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. And Lord Chaitanya is teaching us primarily how to get out of the clutches of this illusory existence and restore ourselves to our original immortal position, which is love of God. And he demonstrated this himself in his life when at the age of 24 he took sannyas. And he showed how we should renounce this world. Prabhupada goes on to explain that it is not necessary for everybody to just take sannyas and give up this world immediately. But he explains that what is important to give up is the propensity for material enjoyment. This is what is important. Whether whatever ashram we are in, it is the propensity to enjoy that we must all renounce. And further, Prabhupada quotes Rupa Goswami as saying that if we want to rid ourselves of this material contamination and come out of Maya, then the only way is that we must make it our only ambition to serve Krishna. This must be our only desire, our only ambition. Only then is it possible for us to restore ourselves to the immortal position. And how does one do this? How does one serve only Krishna? So Prabhupada explains that by dedicating everything we have in the service of Krishna, we can develop love of Krishna. By using our speech, our mind, our words, our money, our life, everything in the service of Krishna, under the guidance of the spiritual master, slowly we can purify ourselves. The Mayavadis, they say that once you restore yourself to the immortal position, then everything else finishes. There is no need to even talk. But Prabhupada explains, the real talking actually begins when you become a devotee of Krishna. When you come back to your constitutional position, real talking begins. Before that, all talking is just materialistic nonsense. Another Mayavadi example which Prabhupada refers to is that the Mayavadis say that an empty pot makes sound, but when the pot is full, it does not make sound, implying thereby that once you reach perfection, then there is no more need to talk. But Prabhupada explains that this analogy is not valid because a human being or a living entity is not a water pot. A living entity has consciousness, whereas a water pot does not have consciousness. So this analogy is not valid. And therefore, we must use everything we have in our possession in the service of Krishna, and in this way we can attain love of Krishna and perfect our life. So this is the summary or the main points of what Srila Prabhupada has said in the first 5 pages of the introduction. Hare Krishna. He says the primary binding force of Maya is sex life. And it is described that the woman is like iron chains, and she binds the man as if by iron chains. And Prabhupada gives the example of the donkey who comes home after a hard day's work, and then he desires to have sex with the she-ass, and all he gets is a few kicks from the she-ass. But still he keeps returning. In the same way, we keep getting kicks from Maya, but we keep wanting to enjoy this illusory energy, and we don't learn our lesson that there is no point in trying to enjoy this illusory energy. Rather, we should just surrender to Krishna. Lord Chaitanya, Lord Srila Prabhupada is explaining that the only way we can actually develop love of Krishna, or the only way we can get out of Maya, is to make it our only ambition to serve Krishna. If we do that by using our speech, our mind, our words, our action, our money, our everything, then slowly, even our missiles, yeah. Then slowly we will develop the taste for serving Krishna, and we will develop love of Krishna.
say the Guru is a representative of all the parampara and also all the demigods and others. So
if it is offered to just one Guru, then others are offered. Why specifically mentioned Gurus?
In the association of Vaishnavas, there will be those that take the position of instructing you, training you, inspiring you in Krishna consciousness. It would be offensive to honor that person as a guru, because you're accepting the position like a disciple from that person. And all of the demigods, all of the manifestations of Godhead are included within anyone who is taking that position of guru. What is being explained here very, very strongly by Prabhupada and Bhaktivedanta Kaviraj Goswami, this doesn't just mean a formal Diksha Guru. But it means anyone who is truly inspiring you and helping you according to the authorized parampara in Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, so that inspiration, that mercy, that divine grace can come through many vessels. And we should humbly worship it wherever it comes. But at the same time, it is being explained by Srila Prabhupada, the dealings are different, in that we always must keep the eternal vows that we have made intact to our Diksha Guru. We must always, of course, the Diksha Guru is also a Shiksha Guru. There is no question of that. But he can manifest God, who is the force of our Diksha Guru, can also manifest his energies through others. And if we understand how that, it's my Diksha Guru speaking through him, can you reject him when he speaks through another? If you reject him when he speaks through another, you're rejecting him. So yes, all of the demigods, God himself, all of the previous acharyas are all present within Guru. But we have to have an understanding from our spiritual master of what the meaning of Guru is. It means his mercy, his grace, his words, his example. It's not limited simply to one physical form. Factually, Prabhupada and all of his God brothers, Prabhupada has dozens and dozens and dozens of God brothers who are bona fide spiritual masters. What are they? They are all nothing more than the manifestations of Bhakti Siddhanta's mercy to the earth. Right? Of course, that's ultimately glorious. What's the best way you can worship Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati? By worshiping Prabhupada, right? Because he's manifesting himself. The previous acharyas are manifesting themselves. And even the present acharyas can manifest themselves through many of their associates. And if we don't understand that principle, that when the guru leaves the planet, we're finished. That's what happened in ISKCON. So many devotees, they would not be willing to take shelter of their own god brothers because they considered that would be an offense to Prabhupada. And practically every one of those devotees, after Prabhupada left, so many people left the movement or just stopped preaching because their spiritual lives was practically finished. They would not take shelter of anyone else. They couldn't see their god brothers. They couldn't see Prabhupada's god brothers. They couldn't see anyone else that they could manifest Prabhupada. And they were not so advanced to be experiencing the divine presence of Prabhupada personally in their hearts at all times. They had to take shelter of other Vaishnavas as representatives of Guru to survive. They had to see Prabhupada's mercy coming through. And even during Prabhupada's life, the best places where preachings were going on was those places where the devotees saw that their leader was none different than Prabhupada. The best was New Vrindavan. So you have to understand, what is the grace of Guru is not just coming from one physical form, but the grace of Guru, that energy, is unlimited. It is infinite. And it can come through infinite vessels. That is parampara. Huh? Yes?
Regarding Siksha Guru and Diksha Guru, we see in our moment, specifically, we see many of the gurus have fallen off. Now, in that case, when the guru has fallen off, then whom do we take him? Diksha Guru. In that case, whatever, then at that, suppose the guru falls down, then whatever the Siksha Guru says, we have to consider the Siksha Guru as Diksha Guru, and move on, fully surrender to him.
Now, you see, guru is guru, whether it's Siksha Guru or Diksha Guru. You can't consider a Shiksha Guru a Diksha Guru because he hasn't given you Diksha. But if he's giving you Krishna, he's a Shiksha Guru. So in that case, one should follow Shiksha Guru. And at a certain point, he should accept Diksha from that Shiksha Guru. You should accept Diksha from that Shiksha. At the beginning, everyone is your Shiksha Guru. You should accept Diksha from that Guru who is most deeply inspiring you to be Krishna conscious. And from that person who your faith is most strong. Yes?
You said that sometimes disciples are so unchaste and immature that having taken Diksha from one guru, they feel that someone else is inspiring them more in the world like Diksha from that person. We have the word to say now that they do it for them. But here, supposing the disciple realizes that made a mistake or he really doesn't feel that he is seeing Krishna through this guru so much, then if he takes Diksha from another guru, does he still chase him?
If that guru is honestly and sincerely representing the parampara, it's very offensive.
So it has to be the same parampara? It has to be the same parampara?
If that guru is honestly and sincerely following the principles of his parampara, then for the disciple to break the vows to skip over to somebody else, it is a very offensive thing.
It means one should not really change from parampara.
It's offensive.
Even from one guru to another, in the same parampara.
You see, the offense ultimately is to Krishna. Krishna is manifesting himself through his spiritual masters. If in Krishna's eyes that guru is properly situated and properly representing him, then when you whether you accept another guru in this parampara or in another parampara, it's an offense. It's whimsical.
So the best thing for that disciple is to take inspiration from this other guru and fulfill the vows to the previous guru.
Yes. And if that other guru is saying something contrary to his service to his guru, then it's best not to associate with such a person. Offer obeisances from a distance. It's like there's the famous tape of Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan, where one of his disciples came to him. He was going to classes from some Babaji's who were speaking. This is at Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan. He was going out every day to go to these other classes because he knew Hindi, he knew Sanskrit, so he could understand these people. So he was so inspired that he came to Prabhupada and asked his blessings to be reinitiated by this other guru. And Prabhupada, in the same mood as Sridhara Chaitanya, he wasn't just trying to be the manipulator, controller, and possessor of the disciple, but he was speaking knowing what the reaction would be in Krishna's eyes if this disciple is unchaste to a bona fide spiritual master. He said, "You are asking permission to accept initiation from another guru? You are asking for my blessings?" He said, "I give you my blessings that if you want to, you can go to hell." He told that devotee that. And then the next day in Srimad Bhagavatam class, he said the same thing to all the devotees. That I told that disciple that if I give you my blessings to go to hell. Because that's what happens if we offend a pure devotee in this way. If the guru falls and is obviously in the eyes of Krishna no longer a bona fide guru, then it is our desperate need to accept initiation from someone who is in good standing. But if that guru is not in a fallen condition, if we simply prefer someone better, that is a great offense. Because the next day you'll love someone better. The next day you'll be inspired by someone better. That's the nature of the mind. You don't want to surrender to where you are, so you'll find better inspiration somewhere else. It's actually a very, very subtle way of Maya to keep you from surrendering and settling down in one direction. She's just always giving you somebody who's a little better. But you're skipping from one to another to another.
What should be the attitude of other Vaishnavas towards such a devotee?
The Vaishnavas should, if that devotee is willing to hear, they should, with great compassion, preach to that devotee and explain that this jumping from one vow to another, jumping from one movement to another, jumping from one guru to another, you'll never make any real spiritual advancement. If the person is not willing to listen, if he's in a Vaishnava sampradaya, we should simply offer him obeisances as a Vaishnava. Because he's still a Vaishnava. But in a very dangerous condition. Yes? No. He told his disciples to take shelter of his disciples. But he told the devotees that they could get knowledge and information from his god brothers. He did not want his disciples to take shelter of them so much. He wanted them for philosophical clarifications. And for clarifications on Vaishnava etiquette, you can go to particular god brothers, he said. But as far as seeking shelter, he wanted his disciples to take shelter of his senior disciples. Senior in the sense of their Krishna consciousness. And really what he wanted is that those devotees could see the senior men in this movement as non-different than him, and to surrender to them as non-different than him. But what happened is, realistically, so many of those devotees who were supposed to be giving Prabhupada shelter to the rest of the movement were becoming more, as big, big landowners, political than they were the servant of the Vaishnavas. See, Prabhupada was always just a humble, very simple servant of the Vaishnavas. But some of these other devotees, they became very powerful and they became a little proud. And they lost their position, really, their mentality as being a humble servant. And they became the dictators of zones and everything like that. And because of that, Prabhupada withdrew his grace. or let's say he changed his grace from empowering them to withdrawing so that Maya could teach them a good lesson. And those devotees are still exalted in spirit because of what they have done, and we should understand what they're going through and why, but their position is not at all exalted once they fall. We should not judge that person's consciousness, but we have to make very discriminative judgment of a person's position in Krishna consciousness. And then what happened is so many devotees became very, very disillusioned, and they really, there was so much rumors and there was so much backbiting and everything else that a lot of Prabhupada's disciples just couldn't find anybody they could take shelter of. And you have to have someone to take shelter of. You have to be practically a pure devotee to just take shelter of your guru when he's gone. You have to learn how to take shelter of your guru through someone who's representing him on earth. That's why most of Prabhupada's disciples on the world today are in New Vrindavan, who are active. I'm not saying there are many, but who are active in the mission, most are at New Vrindavan.
How it is Jagannath Das Babaji's name is mentioned after Baldev Vidya Bhushan? Because he was not direct instructive or Diksha
Guru. Because as I was saying, our disciple succession is not a Diksha disciple succession. It's a Siksha disciple succession. I mean, the spirit of Godhead was coming through these people prominently. Sometimes it's also Diksha. But the actual, just like, actually, if you look through the disciple succession, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Swarup Damodara, Rupa Goswami, who does Krishna Das Kaviraj come under? Several gurus. Who did he take initiation from? He accepted all the six Goswamis as well. So in this way, our disciplic succession is not one so much of physical form, but of spirit. Where that spirit of pure love of God is most manifesting in our life, that person is our prominent guru in life. That is how our disciplic succession is.
You took direct instruction from Baldev Vidya Bhushan or from his literatures?
No, you see, in one sense, there were no very, very significant gurus who did a tremendous amount of work between the two. So therefore, they're not given much importance. That spirit that Baladev had of preaching Krishna consciousness was not really, although there were many bona fide spiritual masters between the two, it was many generations, there wasn't anybody who really, really forcefully and powerfully presented that spirit. They just kind of kept it to themselves. Jagannath Das Babaji actually took that spirit and had that same type of empowerment of Baladev in his own way. And therefore, the gurus between them are not given much importance. But where the spirit of bhakti came most forcefully, that's where the gurus are given most importance. Our conception of parampara is sometimes so simplistic that we become bewildered when we understand the reality of it. But the reality of it is far sweeter and more glorious than our simplistic misunderstanding. Huh?